Welcome to the San Diego County Bar Association's Meet and Confer, a podcast for the San Diego legal community. We're your hosts, Renee Stackhouse and Jim Crosby. We've been talking for, I don't know, about a year about launching this podcast, so I'm really excited that this is the inaugural podcast and we're making it happen. And I think some of the force driving this podcast was everybody at the county bar always talks about how incredible our San Diego legal community is. And this is going to be our way of exploring it for the San Diego community.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start off today just kind of introducing ourselves a little bit. And we decided that we'd do that by interviewing each other. And so go ahead. You're Renee. You start, Renee.
Okay, so I get to start with questions for you?
You do.
Okay, excellent.
And then we'll go back and forth. How about that?
All right, that sounds good. So I was Google stalking you earlier today on your very cool website, trialcall.net. You start off saying you're an experienced business litigator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I Google stalked you further, and I did some math.
And you found out I wasn't. But that's
No, absolutely not. You definitely are. But experienced is what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. If I did my math correctly, 36 years.
Yes, this is my either 36th or 37th year of practice.
Wow.
All in San Diego, too.
Wow, that's incredible. So
you might say that.
You've seen a lot of change in the profession.
Yes, tremendous change.
So how do you make the jump from marine biology to lawyer? Because I saw that you graduated with a degree in marine biology.
You know, it's funny. I speak to students up at USD, and they always ask how you decided to be a lawyer. To be absolutely honest, me becoming a lawyer and moving away from marine biology was a whim. I mean, it wasn't thought out at all, and it was back in the 80s when you could do that. I was a marine biologist. I was working out on the ocean. I did that for 2 or 3 years. It was very repetitive. It was wonderful to be on the ocean. I like the ocean, but it was very repetitive work. I was working for a company that was losing all its employees, and I just had a bachelor's degree, and everybody that was applying for jobs at this company had advanced degrees from Scripps. So I decided that either I had to go back to Scripps or do something else. And then I was married young, and I got divorced right about then. I wanted to do something different, and I just went to law school.
That's very
different.
It's
just that simple.
Wow.
How about you? How'd you decide to be a lawyer?
I flipped a coin.
Really?
There yeah, I flipped a coin. My grandfather passed away, and I had to get a better job, take care of my grandma. And so I was like, okay, heads, it's an MBA. Tails, it's law school. And landed on tails. Boom, here I am.
So you couldn't tell USD students that you had a grand plan to be a lawyer either. So.
No plans. I knew no lawyers. It is completely crazy to me. And I think to all my high school friends that I am a lawyer today.
So I have a business litigation practice. It's all trial work. It's ever been. I'm kind of a generalist inside the general rubric of business litigation. I do all sorts of different things, and I like it. So how about you? What's your practice?
So I was raised on doing personal injury at Thor Smith, Bartolotta, McGuire, where I got my start. And I took that practice with me when I started my own firm. So I still do plaintiff's personal injury, but contingency fee by itself is not the world's best business plan. So as a solo, I have offset that by doing military and criminal defense as well, which I love. And it keeps me in the courtroom a lot more than just a personal injury practice. So that's good. Keeps
my
chops
up. Yeah, I like
the
courtroom too. That's why I'm a lawyer. I enjoy that. So
me too. So much fun.
So you're a small practice. Why do you like a small practice?
Oh, for every reason. Because it's all about me.
Mm-hmm. It is about control.
Oh my gosh. It's amazing. I figure out where I want to be. I figure the vibe for my office, and I'm there a million hours. So that's important to me. I pick my cases. I pick my clients. I pick what days I work, which is most. But, you know, if there is that random Tuesday that you're free and can go to Disneyland, you can do that. So being a solo is just remarkably precious to me.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it too. You just control everything. It's all yours. And so you make bad decisions, you make good decisions. They're all your decisions. And I like that aspect of it.
That's true. And you've done both. You've gone back and forth.
Yeah, I was a law. For about 80% of my career, I've been a solo. I was in a small firm to start off. And then I went out on my own in 1992. Interesting. I went out on my own in 1992. I had no clients. I borrowed $35,000. I had one child, one year old. We had a baby on the way, and we bought a house.
Oh my gosh.
And I went out on my own all at the same time. It was one hell of a year, actually. It was one heck of a year. And so I was on my own for 20 years. And then in the 5-6 years ago, I got recruited to go into a law firm here in town. And it just kind of caught me at a restless time. I was just kind of restless. And so I went into a law firm here in town, a 60-person law firm, fine law firm. I didn't like that. And then I went to a smaller law firm, and I didn't like that. And I thought the reasons why I didn't like the first law firm were because of the law firm. But then I kind of realized it was just law firms in general, and I'd prefer to be on my own. And they were wonderful people. I made money. I tried cases. It was all interesting, but it was all kind of just too slow for me, and I couldn't control decision-making. And so yeah. I'm back on my own, and I'll be that way forever.
So. I have to tell you, we're not alone in loving being solos. 60 to 70% of the demographics in California said that that's what lawyers are now made up of, solo and small firms. So we're a growing trend.
So I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
First of all, how's your daughter?
You don't pull any punches. Mm-hmm. My son, Gabriel, with
the
very, very long hair. With my very long hair. Everybody.
Darn.
Everybody does that. Your daughter is so beautiful. And I say, thank you. And it drives.
Well, I'm not alone, right?
No, it drives Phil crazy. He always goes, he's a boy. And I said, who cares? You just say thank you.
So,
and he is beautiful. So.
So let me ask the follow-up question. How has having a child changed your attitude towards work?
Oh my gosh. Having a child has changed everything, period. I will start off by giving huge kudos to the women out there, the women lawyers out there that I've watched who made it look flawless and easy and completely had me fooled into thinking that it was going to be much easier than it is. I think that it has made me value time more, and it has made me more strategic in the cases that I take. I have a picture of my son on my desk to make sure that I stop saying yes to all the pro bono cases, because you just can't anymore. You have someone, a small human to take care of, and it's more important to be strategic. And
I'm the same way. I have all three of my kids looking at me on my desk. So I make sure people pay their bills, and I get out of cases when they're not.
Yes.
And I don't make stupid decisions when I do take contingency cases.
Well,
but
I'll
then
say
I seem to do it anyway.
It's so. At least reduced my stupid decision-making. Yeah. I mean, you have to be more careful now. There's someone depending on you.
You have to make money.
You do.
And so you have to focus on your law practice, which is this intellectual undertaking, and it's all very interesting. But then you have to make money because you have these three kids looking at you. And having kids is one of the reasons that drove me to my solo practice too. I wanted to set up my practice someplace that was close to home so that I could do all their stuff, so that if I went to a game or something like that, it's not a half day off, it's a long lunch. And so I set my practice up out near my house, and it worked great. I hardly missed anything over the terms of, you know, middle school and high school, and they're all athletes, and I saw all their games, but still had a full-time practice, and it worked quite well.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Gabe has a little couch in my office, and he has his coloring books, and so he's able to come in and make the space his own, and I like it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could get away with that in a big firm.
Okay, your turn.
My next question. Because we're talking about things other than practicing law, mm-hmm. I noticed that you were on the board of directors for Casa Cornelia and the San Diego Law Library. So, I mean, we could devote a whole podcast, I think, just to how do you decide what you're going to get involved in and how do you get involved.
I was going to ask you that exact same question. Right, so on Casa Cornelia, I met their executive director,
Carmen. She's amazing.
Carmen Chavez is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And they just do very important work. And I wanted to support their very important work. And I got asked to go on the board. And I just said yes without even thinking twice about it. And it was a great experience. I ended up jumping off because I got involved in the Jenny Commission. It was not enough time. I got involved in Casa Cornelia because they do pro bono work representing asylum candidates. And these people come from desperate circumstances to this country, and they don't have any money. They don't have any lawyers. They are completely powerless people. And that's what drew me to Casa Cornelia. And then I started doing asylum cases, and I'm in the middle of one right now, which is very satisfying.
So you've continued the work.
Yeah.
This is Michelle Chavez, Director of Public Services at the San Diego County Bar Association. Attorneys, are you looking to increase business and build your referral base? Now is a great time to join the Lawyer Referral and Information Service. Did you know the LRIS program receives over 30,000 referrals and requests from the public each year? Our program is booming, and we are always looking for more attorneys. The program is easy to join. Here are the four easy steps. Complete the panel application. Provide two letters of recommendation, provide your liability insurance, and submit the LRIS panel fee of $125 a year. If you are interested, please contact Elizabeth Sorensen at 619-321-4153 or email us at lris@sdcba.org.
How do you like being the president of the solo and small firm section of California Lawyers Association?
California Lawyers Association has worked so hard to establish themselves stepping out from the state bar. And for those who don't know, it's an ongoing commitment to getting the word out. The state bar has been turned into just a regulatory agency, and the sections that used to fall under the state bar split off and became California Lawyers Association. Solo smalls are really important. We talked about that, right? I mean, there's so many of them out there, and it's hard. It can be alienating. It can be difficult when you are used to brainstorming with people and you don't have that anymore. It can be scary if you can't find a job, so you go solo and you don't know if you're committing malpractice. I mean, there's so many concerns. The biggest part of what we're trying to do is just figure out, how do we let everyone know, one, you're not alone. Two, we're there to help them not just be better lawyers, but to be better business owners, which is a concept that is very foreign to a lot of lawyers who are not trained in how to successfully run a business. And I think our biggest project that we're working on is revamping the 2008 State Bar Book on how to open and manage a law firm to the present day, because things have changed so much in the last decade.
Yeah.
And we have to make it modern and, you know, get that to folks so that they can make sure that they're doing what they need to do to run their businesses and help the public.
So let me ask you this question. When do you sleep? I'm serious. I mean, when do you sleep? You're everywhere. And I speak to young lawyers a lot, and there's always discussions about life, work-life balance, which is seems kind of odd. You put a name on it, and then you have to discuss it differently. But I'm curious how you juggle everything. Or do you juggle everything? Or you just kind of do what we all do and just kind of bop through the day and handle it all and finish the day?
Yeah, I think I don't really believe in work-life balance.
Yeah, neither do I.
I think it's a nice idea, concept,
yeah.
But I think it's day by day for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's what do I need to accomplish that day?
And
it's,
me too.
You know, if I can keep my child alive, tuck him into bed at night, and he's fed, then I feel like that's a success. If I can keep my business afloat, that's a success. If I can make it through at least three or four things on my checklist, that's a success. But it really, it's day by day, and it's planning in advance, and it's making sure, again, I stick to the things that I love so that it's never a chore. Okay.
Your turn.
All right. So I have to ask this. Because this is the big one. 36 years in practice, I want you to narrow one thing down for me. Greatest legal accomplishment.
I had a case, this is very out of the ordinary. I had a case for the, I did a pro bono case for the San Diego Volunteer Lawyers Program. It was like the late 80s, early 90s, and they were doing a bunch of, and I don't remember all the details, but they were doing a bunch of HIV litigation back then. This was a case where this guy, HIV, he had a whole life. I mean, he had a job and a house and a whole life. And he got sick and he got fired, right? And then he had some long-term disability carrier. And I think it had to do with ERISA, and it was all kind of wrapped in. And he had long-term disability deny him benefits. And so we sued for him in the U.S. District Court to restore his benefits. And by the end of the case, this guy who had a whole life, you know, a whole life, right? Job, the whole routine. By the end of the case, he was living in a back of a truck in a parking lot in Ocean Beach with nothing, right? Nothing. And we ended up getting him, you know, like $35,000, $40,000, you know, which is in the grand scheme of litigation is nothing. But this was like everything for this guy. He was able to buy a mobile home out in the East County someplace and own it all himself. And it was just, you know, in the greater scheme of all the cases I've handled, in terms of the case itself, it was pretty a small deal. But in terms of the result for this guy, it was extraordinary. And I will never forget that case, ever. But then again, my dark side came out in that case, too, because there was a lawyer representing the insurance company, and we were at a settlement conference down in front of a magistrate back in the day. And I got really angry at the guy, and I asked him, and he's just a lawyer doing his job, and I said, do you sleep at night doing this work? Which was an awful thing to say, and I remember that to this day. It wasn't. So I think back on that, and those times when I'm not very professional, I think back on that. It was a bad moment. I still feel bad about it. So,
you know, I obsess he's just doing his about job. All the times when I have slipped on saying something like that. And my goal is to try to be 90% good, because mm-hmm. there's just times where you have to acknowledge you're a human being. And sometimes it is personal. I mean, it's you work so hard and you see the pain and the struggles that your client's going through that no one else sees. And it does make it hard sometimes.
It does, but cases and clients come and go.
They do.
Your colleagues are always here.
And it's so important to be, mm-hmm. I was telling law students last night at the summer social, you know, your reputation starts now. Mm. And we are a tight-knit legal community. And you need to figure out what your method of being kind is and being able to be professional. So. Mm-hmm. I told them, when I have opposing counsel come over for a depo and we haven't had a good relationship, I bake cookies, because it's hard to be mean when you have freshly baked cookies. Okay, so along those lines, a new lawyer or a law student comes up to you at a reception.
Mm-hmm.
What can they say that will actually get your attention?
You know, I just think what they want to do. I'm always interested in young lawyers and law students and what they really want to do with the practice of law and whether they're being practical about it. I think one of the things, I'm on the USD board, alumni board, and one of the things I like to talk about with students is kind of the practicalities, and that is taking all this stuff they learn and this knowledge and this way of thinking and being lawyer and turning that into making money. And so I tend to talk to these people very practically about how you have to figure that out.
And you're starting as a professor in the fall. So what's the piece of advice you're going to give them that you wish someone would have given you when you were in their shoes?
Well, the best business advice for hourly lawyers that I use all the time is don't cut your rates. You know,
yes.
Set your rates and stick to your rates.
Oh, can we do an episode on that?
Yeah,
setting your rates.
And really be tough. And if somebody's not going to pay your rate, let them walk out the door. That's really hard when you're trying to build a practice, but, you know, cutting your rates is a race to the bottom. And so that's practical advice. You know, just general advice, you know, just work hard and hustle. The one thing I tell young students and law students and young lawyers is you just got to go out and hustle all the time for work. However you do it, you can't sit in your office and expect to have business. And even after all these years I've been practicing, I find that if I stop doing all this stuff I do, work dries up. So even now, the most successful lawyers in this town, the ones with the biggest practices and those that make the biggest money, are lawyers that are hustling all the time for business, and they never stop. And so that's what I tell students all the time and young lawyers, just get out of your seat and go hustle and pick up the phone and take somebody out to lunch.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? You've been around a long. What would you give advice to a young lawyer just starting out right now? Business advice, professional advice? Two different questions.
Okay. So business advice, I would say keep your overhead as low as possible. You don't need to bust the bank, because you will bust the bank. So figure out what you can handle.
And you can practice so cheap these days.
You can practice
anywhere.
The
barriers to entry for young lawyers to practicing law is just, it's nothing these days.
Yeah.
Financial barriers to practice, let's put it that way.
So that'd be the business advice. Professionally, I think I would say You've got to get your face out there. Mm-hmm. You've got to get your face out there. Find something you care about. Go do it. Be committed. Make commitments. Follow up with the commitments. And be out there, because otherwise you're going to get lost in the sea. So we had some amazing discussions this week about topics for this show and what we could talk about for the San Diego legal community and the County Bar Association that is different and exciting and putting words to topics to what makes San Diego so special.
Mm-hmm.
You did an amazing write-up on the podcast, Meet and Confer, when you were teasing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you listed some of those topics. Do you want to talk about any of them?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things that maybe we'll develop with this podcast between you and me is the generational difference. We came of age in this business in very different times. You know, I'm kind of back in the day and you're now. And I think that that will lead to some interesting discussions between the two of us.
We can talk about the time at my first job, a partner asked if I took dictation. I was like, what?
Yeah, I noticed your post today. You get the "Are you the court reporter" thing too. Oh, I've actually seen that
all the time.
Times, yeah.
Court reporter, translator, defendant.
And I'm very interested in technology. I think technology is the great equalizer. I mean, I think it's it allows me to handle cases, big cases against well-heeled law firms, cases that 20 years ago there's no way I could have done because I'd have to have three staff members to do it, and I wouldn't get hired to do those things back then in the day either. So it's allowed my practice to reach up and do very complicated large work against well-heeled opponents for a lot of money, and that's just technology. So I'm very interested in that.
We have so much that we can talk about with that too. I've had the honor of chairing our inaugural tech committee, which is now Programs, Ed, and Tech, over the last 2 years, and we hired a member technology officer, Adriana Linares, for the county bar.
I know her.
And we did some outreach to the county bar members, and the feedback we got is that technology is overwhelming. There's too many options. The extent of technology people use is their email or their office products. And there's so much more out there. And I think the biggest member benefit to me, maybe I'm biased because I work with Adriana all the time, is we have this member tech officer who can meet with you for free and give you all the advice. You can try things, you can play with things, you can touch things, and you can figure out how to run your practice best. That is, priceless. People charge so much for that. And as a county bar member, you get that for free. So it's such a cool resource that we have.
Hey, I thought my ears were burning. Thanks so much for the shout out, Renee. I really appreciate it. I'm Adriana Linares, Member Technology Officer at the San Diego County Bar. I'm available to meet with you either online, we make it easy, or if you like a face-to-face meeting, we can always set up a time to meet at the Bar Center. You can email me at MTO, as in Member Technology Officer, at sdcba.org.
Well, Renee and I, you know, this is a new undertaking for us, and we're hoping that we will grow an audience as we grow our podcast. Our audience grows with us, and in that vein, if anybody that's listening has anything that you'd like us to address, both serious and not so serious, both entertaining and enlightening, you can send your ideas to bar@sdcba.org, and they'll get to us. And we'd be interested in hearing from you as to what you might want to hear about. And I will say, this is not just going to be me and Renee chatting. We hope in the future, most every podcast will have a guest who can speak about our particular topic. So
this was a one-off,
you and me. This is a one-off. It's very fun, though.
We hope you had a good time, too, listening. So please do let us know, bar@sdcba.org. You can also make sure to like us and follow us on Facebook. We're San Diego County Bar. On Twitter, we're @SD County Bar. For LinkedIn, we're the San Diego County Bar Association. And we're on Instagram @SD County Bar. Well, we have satisfied our meet and confer requirement, and we'll leave you with the SDCBA mission statement. Inclusion and community define us. Innovation and leadership propel us. Your growth motivates us. Celebrating you and the profession is us. Thank you for celebrating our profession with us, and we'll see you next time.